Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Tyler Osek is glad to have you back on. I know we're kind of re-recording. The last time I was kind of sick, so we're kind of changing things up a little bit. But how's your offseason been, man?
It's going good. I'm just out here in Arizona. I'm in Glendale, training at the White Sox facility. So I'll go up there Monday through Friday and work out there 9 to 1, and then just try and give lessons and do a little bit of work with kids after that. So that's what I'm doing.
No, for sure. And I see you grinding. I see you posting all the time on Instagram and TikTok and all the kind of stuff. Like, how's the business going?
Yeah, no, it's going good for sure. I started up a little remote training program where it's just, I'm giving these people about 3 to 6 months of programming for hitting routines and workouts. And because I found out, what made me good wasn't really just being what I did at practice, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's all the stuff I did when I wasn't at the field, like going to the gym, practicing in the cage and stuff like that. That made me good. So I just want to help kids do the right shit, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. What is maybe like one of the number one questions like young athletes or like college athletes ask you when you're training? Like, what's like maybe their biggest question that they have for you?
I think that they're just kind of searching for a routine to do in the cage, because I guess you could go to lessons or learn from a hitting coach or private hitting coach, but they're trying to find some routines that they could go do every single time they go and hit in the cage that'll help them lock in for their game or their practice, whatever that is. So that's pretty much the biggest question. And then some lifting stuff too as well. But I feel like a lot of kids kind of have a good grasp on that on their own as well.
Yeah. So then aside from that, like what would maybe be like your biggest advice for like guys trying to make it, trying to become better hitters? You talked about like the stuff like working out, creating a routine, but like what's maybe that's the answer, but what's like the biggest advice you have for guys like that?
I'm a big believer in that you could kind of make yourself into whatever you want to be.
Yeah.
And I think that if you, it's going to take some time. Some people it's going to take a little longer than others, but if you do the right stuff and you do it consistently and, I'd say if you work out 5 to 6 times a week, get in the cage 5-6 times a week and practice baseball a lot, like you're going to get good. And it's about just doing the right things, just going to the gym, practicing baseball and making sure you're doing the right stuff. But if you do it for a long enough time, you're going to get where you want to be.
Yeah, no, for sure. I might have to sign up for your classes and see if you can make me a non-baseball player. Somewhat of a hitter.
No, for you, girl, I'll give it to you for free.
No doubt. We'll see. Let's do that. We'll do that. And then maybe I'll have to show up there in Arizona sometime and see if I can face a couple of batter pitchers and see, if you're the guru for non-baseball players.
Yeah, no, we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, I just learned this. I took all the stuff that I learned from all my coaches and my dad and stuff like that. It's funny because, growing up, I didn't really think I had it all figured out. I listened to what my coaches and my elders had to say, and that's how I got good. That's the only thing,
What was maybe the biggest advice your dad gave you? Because obviously he was a pro player. You were around baseball since you were a kid. And we'll get into that. But like, I mean, obviously I'm sure he's coached you throughout, probably even still now. Like maybe some advice that he has given you that you're like, oh man, it's good.
Yeah. I mean, his biggest advice has been with hitting. He's really studied the swing and knows a lot about hitting and just helped me a lot throughout my entire life. Like I was 9 or 10 years old, I still remember he would be showing me videos of like Albert Pujols' swing in slow motion and showing me like what to look for in the swing so that I can pick up what the right correct movements are. And then he's just gave me all my hitting stuff is pretty much came from my dad because he played for 10 years in the big leagues, but he was a backup for a lot of his career. And he said on his last couple of years, he really watched like what the best hitters did. Cause he's like, all right, on my way out as a player, I'm going to really focus on what the best guys do and why they're really good. So he would watch Ryan Zimmerman's hitting routine.
Yeah.
He would watch Barry Bonds. He would watch Albert Pujols and just all those guys. And he would ask them questions and kind of figure out what they did and why they were so good. Mm-hmm. And then he just shared, not just me, he shared it to all the people that he came across and helped a lot of kids as well. And that's kind of what he's doing with his life. But yeah, so he's been very good on the hitting side with me.
And how sick is that you can have your dad, who's been in the major leagues, show you just break down swings with you of like legends, like Pujols and Barry Bonds and like all these guys who, you know, he played in the same era with, and like he can just show you like what made them great and then kind of show you how to use that or implement that into your like career and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's big, and I mean, it's super helpful to, you know, since a young age I've been able to have him to, I guess, be able to learn from, get advice from. He's taught me what the best players do, and then I just try and copy that and implement it in myself and see how it works. And it's been super helpful, and I'm really appreciative that he's helped me a lot.
Yeah, no, for sure. And let's talk about that, because obviously the last time you were on, you were telling me a story about how like in the clubhouse, like you had gotten your first chew.
Yeah, it was just, you know, we were out hitting batting practice. They were hitting on the field, and he's like, "Hey guys, can you guys watch my kid for like 5 minutes? I'm going to go inside and get something from the locker room." And my dad goes inside, and then Brian Giles pulls me over and he goes, "Hey kid," he goes, "this is like Pop Rocks. Let me put it in your lip." He goes, don't swallow it. He said, "just spit it out." And I was like, "all right, sounds good." And he takes a little dip of a Copenhagen mint, puts it in my lip. And then my dad comes back. He's like, "Hey, I let you guys watch my kid for 5 minutes and you guys put a dip in his mouth."
Jeez. That's awesome. And that's just kind of like the clubhouse vibe then. As like a kid, you were just in that environment. Do you think that kind of helped you out as like now you're in like the clubhouse with the guys in the White Sox and stuff, like just that clubhouse environment, like learning how to act after a loss, after a win, things of that nature?
Yeah, I guess that definitely has helped. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of been normal to me. I mean, this is how I've grown up, and I've been inside of clubhouses and just in and out my entire life, whether that's when my dad was playing in professional or now he's coaching college. So, and then he also works at a baseball facility. So it's just, I've always been around the game. So it's, you know, you kind of figure it out on your own. Just, you just adapt to it.
No, so. For sure. Kind of random question. It's just maybe how my brain works, but like your dad having played like a decent while back. Now looking at like the low batting averages, like the three true outcome kind of style of baseball. Does he ever like talk to you about that kind of style and how like things are so much different now than the way it used to be back when he was playing?
Yeah. I mean, I would say he doesn't really enjoy watching today's. I guarantee you a lot of people from that era probably don't, but yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess from what he was brought up on was the fundamentals, mm-hmm. playing the game the right, being a good teammate, moving runners over, trying to win baseball games and not just being solely for your statistics on the home run side. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's probably a tough game to watch when you go watch a game and there's 20 strikeouts on a side and not really putting balls in play and non-competitive at bats. And it's kind of sad. I mean, I think it's just that the game has become so analytical and they're not really rewarding, like I'd say, performance as much. It's like, it's just money based, political. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I guess the analytics has really overdrawn the game where it's like, these people are thinking that they can rewrite the rule books and do their own thing. And it's just not working. I mean, 250 is considered a good batting average nowadays. Like, yeah. that should not be a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gotta figure out how to turn this back in a different way.
Do you think the shift is going to help, or banning the shift?
So I don't know what it is, but all I know is like, it would be way more entertaining for fans. It would be more entertaining for players. I don't like going and watching games and just watching fucking a lot of strikeouts, yeah. no balls in play. You could pretty much stick people at any defensive position because there's not that many balls in play. Like mm-hmm. So it is what it is.
And like you have been like pretty good, decent, like hitter, like your average is good. Like you make a lot of contact. Is that something you pride yourself in, just like based off like the way baseball is now?
Yeah, I mean, I just grew up watching where, like, I remember growing up, like, I valued batting average. Like, I always thought the best hitters and the best players were the guys that had the highest average. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you hit for high average, the power and the extra base hits come as well. I think if you try and hit for average, that's when the extra base hits and the power will come, opposed to if you're trying to hit for extra base hits and home runs. I think that's when you go down a little slippery slope of stuff like that. And I mean, it's not easy though, because that's what the game pays for. They pay mm-hmm. for power. That's why a lot of people are trying to do it, you know?
Yeah, you see a lot of guys with like .220, .230 batting averages, but they'll have like 30-40 home runs, and like they're making money. Like they're like, it's crazy how like people value different things now.
Yeah, for me, I just don't like walking back to the dugout after strike. So
what do you, so when you do strike out, like what kind of, like what do you do? Like, I mean, if you have a bad game, like how do you stay mentally strong? Because obviously like that's a huge thing. Striking out is going to happen, you know, having bad outings as a pitcher is going to happen. You've gone through adversity, right? Like Tommy John injuries and stuff like that. Like, how do you stay positive? Oh, what's up?
Yeah, this is Big Kev. This is one of our equipment managers.
Oh, what's good? What's happening, Big Kev?
Not much. He's the freaking man.
Yeah.
So you're hanging out with us.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Well, I'll get back to my question in a second, but where y'all hanging out? So y'all got breakfast and stuff. Like, what do you guys mount to?
Yeah. We're in Tempe right now. What do you got to say, Kev?
What's up? Nice to meet you. Podcast
Francisco.
Francisco, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, man.
Heck yeah.
Do y'all three live together over there? Like, are you just roommates?
Me and Addison live together, and okay. Then Ev's over here just hanging out with us for the weekend.
Guys weekend.
Yes, sir, Kev.
What does he do for the White Sox?
He's clubhouse manager.
Oh, sick. Okay, cool.
Yeah, he works with the complex out in Arizona, and he takes care of pretty much everything that, you know, he makes our lives a lot easier. He helps us with, he does the laundry. He folds everything, make sure that everything goes smoothly in the clubhouse and that it's an easy day for us, you know, so that we don't really have to focus on that stuff. Yeah. We can just work on the baseball stuff, and he takes care of all that.
That's cool. Is he there year round, or does he go?
What'd you say?
Is he there year round or what?
Fall.
So he's here for the fall, and then during the season he goes and he helps out with the different affiliates. So he'll go from Kannapolis, he'll go to Winston-Salem, and then he'll go to Birmingham. Yeah. He spends a week at each place and then just goes to each one.
What a life.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
It's crazy. All right. Well, at least now I know who to reach out to get me into the stadium over there whenever I feel like traveling.
Yeah, he'll hook you up. He's a big NASCAR fan. He's got his Jeff Gordon shirt on right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's crazy. That's probably going to end this relationship with him and I, but I guess one thing I never got into.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't either.
I don't understand just watching cars driving. Like, he's probably frustrated because I'm sure he hears this a lot too, but just watching cars drive in circle after circle. I'm like, why? Like, I don't see the point, but
I don't either. You have to be really drunk to appreciate it.
Exactly.
There you go.
You gotta get lights.
Yeah, you gotta get on those bus lights, you know, to really appreciate it. You know? That's how you appreciate the alcohol.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay, that's good to know. It's good to know. But yeah, so back to like the mental side of things, like when you strike out or if you have a bad game, we're going through adversity. Like you, like I said, you had Tommy John injuries. How do you deal with the mental side of the game?
Yeah, I mean, if I have a bad game, I just honestly don't really care that much. Like, just because it's like, you know, baseball's so hard, and you know, you're going to have good games and you're going to have bad games. And the cool thing about it is that's what I do like about how playing every day is, you know, the next day you got another chance to go out there and hopefully do something good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy. You're going to have stretches where you stink, but when you do good, it's pretty rewarding and it feels good. And it just makes it feel better when you know, your work does pay off and you have a couple hits and maybe a double or something.
Yeah, no, for sure. So going back into your childhood and stuff, when did you realize that, you know, maybe you could make a career out of baseball, or maybe you're a little bit better than the rest?
Yeah, I mean, I would say growing up, I was always pretty good hitting. And and then when I got to, like, you know, at 12 years old, I was probably, like, in my area, probably the best player. And then from 12 to 15, I wasn't. And a lot of kids that I grew up with started to get a lot better than me. And then, you know, I just saw them get pass me up, and I saw them starting to get scholarship offers and stuff like that. And I was just, it just hit me one day, and I was like, you know, what do I want to do in my life? What do I love football? Do I want to try and pursue this? And then I just thought about it, and I was like, yeah, you know, I really do like it. But if I'm going to do it, I want to take it serious. And that's when I kind of started getting into you know, working out and trying to get good at baseball. And I just started doing the things that I do now, but I started doing it at 15 or 16 and then slowly but surely, like over, you know, it took maybe 2 years, but then I started to get good again.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what was, who was maybe one of the guys in your area who maybe went pro, maybe went D1, who was like just that dude in like the in your area where you kind of were playing at, who, you know, it was like everyone knew that was like that D1 commit or that was like that pro ball, gonna get drafted kind of guy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say growing up, it was this kid, Andrew Gazzola. He went to Stony Brook and he had a great career. And, but me and him played travel ball together. And then me and him were, you know, we would hit 3 and 4 and stuff. And then I just saw him start to get a lot better than me. And he was kind of the guy who, you know, motivated me to try and get good again. Because he got an offer from Stony Brook pretty early. It was like 10th grade. So I was like, you know, I got to catch back up. Because he was a lot ahead of me at that time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just started trying to do the right things. But he had a great career. He played for 4 years, started at Stony Brook. And he was one of the best players I ever played with, you know, so.
That's awesome. So then when did you start looking at schools and stuff? Like, obviously you went to Chipola for your first year. Why the JUCO route? I mean, obviously, like, Chipola, like, one of the better JUCOs out there, probably can compete with any school, any D1 school out there. But, like, what was kind of the reason behind going there?
Sanjak's better.
What do you say?
Addison said Sanjak is better because he went there.
Did he go to Wabash or no? Where did he go?
Yeah, he went to Sanjak and then Wabash.
Okay, but yeah. Hey, did he play with Antoine Kelly or no?
I'm not sure. I'll ask him.
Did okay.
He play with Antoine?
I was there with Jackson Rutledge.
He was there with Jackson Rutledge.
Okay.
And stuff like that. But hey, you got to see who's here. He just pulled up. It's Brian Ramos. He just got added to the 40-man roster with the White Sox.
Dang, okay.
Yeah, so he's hanging out with us too. He just got here.
That's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, he's honestly probably like one of the best players I've ever seen in my life. It's fun to watch him play.
So what makes him so good? You know, pump his tires a little bit now that he's there.
He's just so strong and like athletic. It's like, it's unreal. He's like 6'3". How much do you weigh, bro? Yeah, so he's like 6'3", 225, like no fat on him. He's super explosive. He's great defense, and then he'll hit balls like 450.
That's crazy.
But simple, repeatable swing, you know, so he doesn't struggle with off speed. He's very mature for his time, you know.
So good for him. You know, shout out to him. Give him, you know, pump his tires a little bit, for sure.
No, for sure.
Okay, yeah, so back to JUCO round stuff. Obviously, you went to Chipola. You didn't go to Wabash, but whatever. It's not a big deal. how was your time over there?
Yeah, I absolutely loved going to junior college. It was the best decision I ever made. And, you know, it's just you go and you're around guys that are all trying to do the same thing, whether they're trying to go play at a different college or they're trying to get drafted. And everybody's on the same mission. You know, if you're going to go junior college to play baseball, you're pretty serious about baseball and you really value it to your life. And, you know, it's just a different brotherhood than, you know, I'd say any other thing that I've ever been through. And it was awesome. And, you know, we had a good team. 1 year we had 11 draft picks.
Jeez.
So it was awesome.
Yeah, that's insane. And like, I love talking to guys who won JUCO because like I hear the stories from like from Wabash, like my guy, Antoine Kelly, he went to Wabash. Like he was telling me just like he got in trouble or not. He got in trouble, but like somebody got in trouble and the whole team was punished by doing just random, like crazy waking up early and doing these stupid drills for like no reason. Like it's just insane. Like the different things you coaches get away with at like a JUCO versus like a D1 school.
Yeah, it's actually funny. You know, when I was at Chipola, it's like, you know, because on the weekends we would have a good amount of like colleges come and watch, like, you know, mm-hmm. just trying to recruit players. And it's funny because we lost to a team that we shouldn't have. And there was like 12 to 15 schools there and they were waiting over by the fence to talk to one of our pitchers. And we had to run after the game. We went down the line and we just ran until we threw up. And our coach was like, "Hey, Brady, you better tell that coach." He's like, "You'll have to call him on the phone because..." He's like, "Because we're not going to be over there for a while." So the guy hung out by the fence for about an hour until we had finished. And then he just winded up leaving because we were running for so long.
Jeez.
But it's just, that wouldn't happen at like a Division I school.
No, not at all. Like, I know, Apple Pie Valley, I think, is one in, like, Arizona. Like, I've heard some crazy stories from there and Wabash, a bunch of others. It's funny how everything kind of goes down there. And, like, you didn't get a win championship. Obviously, you had, like, your injury and stuff. But the guys, while you were there, they did win a championship. And they win, like, every year. Like, shout out to them for just being, like a legitimately, like, top-tier school.
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually having a bloody nose right now.
Oh, nah, okay, it's all good. Don't wait.
Yeah. So we'll just have to take a little break.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm having a bloody nose on the podcast.
It's a dry climate.
Yeah, it's I guess because coming from New York to Arizona. Yeah.
Do you talk about that dry climate out there, man? It's snowing over here.
How you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going? What's your name again?
Brian Ramos. What's your name?
Francisco.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Yeah. How's hey, congratulations on the 40, man, bro.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. They just give me the new like a couple days ago. So, you know, I'm pretty excited and happy.
Yeah. No, that's sick. Cool deal. Where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Cuba.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm from Cuba.
My dad was born in Puerto Rico.
Oh, your dad? Oh, yeah. So, you know Spanish, right?
Mm-hmm.
You speak Spanish. Oh, okay. That's cool.
Little. Poquito. Yeah.
So you born here or what?
California.
Oh, California, yeah.
Yeah. My dad was born in Puerto
Rico. You know a little Spanish then?
Poquito
español. Oh. You dad from Puerto Rico, you say, right?
Yeah, he was born in Puerto Rico, yeah.
Okay, that's cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pleasure. I'm gonna let you talk with all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm just having a bloody nose, I guess, because Arizona from New York, it's like a different climate.
No, that's fair. Like it's snowing. Or it was snowing. It's cold and stuff. But I don't even know what we were talking about, to be honest.
We were talking about JUCO.
Oh yeah. So like obviously your team won that 1 year. You were injured and stuff. But you decided to transfer you at UCF. Did you play 2 years at Chipola or what?
I played a year and then I also. I got hurt, so then I was rehabbing my elbow, and okay. I was still around the team and just practicing with them and working out there.
So what was maybe one of the biggest differences then going from, like, Chipola to UCF?
You know, I mean, you know, going to Chipola, it's cool because it was really good competition. It was kind of like playing baseball already. So then when you go there, it's you're prepared for it and you're ready, but then – also, like, the coaches at UCF are really good at, like, developing players. Mm-hmm. They're really good on the offensive side just because they have you do the right things. Like, the routines and drills that they have you do are all good and what pro players do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we hit a lot of machine and we face good pitching. We inter-squad a lot in the fall, so then we play a lot of good players.
Mm-hmm.
And then you naturally just get better and continue to develop and stuff.
No, for sure. So then how was it like, obviously, because they had the football team was like just electric, like they were just a wagon. 25 game win streak, undefeated. I mean, I don't know if you could consider them national championships. Maybe you were on that bandwagon, maybe not. But I mean, like, how was it just going to those games and just watching like the atmosphere that they were in?
Yeah, it was so cool because, like, you know, the year that I was there, like, they went undefeated and it was just really cool to see. And I'm happy that college players are starting to get paid now.
Oh, for sure.
I pretty much like blow up that school. The amount of money that they brought in and how much they changed that school just because they were really good at football was like the amount of people that wanted to come to the games, tailgate. The football games were incredible. It was so fun. So I'm super happy that I went there at that time. It was awesome. And, you know, it was just cool seeing like Mackenzie Milton, Shaquem Griffin, like walking around campus. Like, you know, they were rock stars there. So it was awesome.
Yeah, so, like, obviously they're rock stars. The football team was just, like, loaded and, like, obviously a really good group of guys. Like, what about the baseball team? Like, how was the baseball team when you were there?
We were good. We were first four out to make it to a regional, but we put up two. I think we were around 35 and 24 both years that I was there. And we had good seasons. You know, that conference is really tough. You know, playing East Carolina, South Florida, Houston, Memphis, like, that – there's not really a let up in that conference. It's super underrated in my opinion, the American. Mm-hmm. So it was good, but you know, now they're going to the Big 12. So that's awesome for them. They're going to have more chance to make it to the tournament and it's just going to be good for UCF, you know?
No doubt. When does that like officially start then? Like them that they're in the Big 12?
Next year. Oh, so next season.
That's crazy.
Not, the following season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's cool. Good for them. Obviously, it's going to be more like more money, more eyes on them, more it just opportunity for like, every athlete like, involved in that school, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, exactly.
Who was maybe one team that you loved to face then when you were in college? That one team that you just you're like, all right, I'm going to go 2 for 3 with a home run and maybe pimp the home run while I'm there.
I mean, I loved playing against University of Florida just because like they were like the big in-state like school. Like growing up, like I remember the schools that I like would say that I remembered playing like watching on TV was University of Florida, North Carolina, LSU, and like. So then, you know, when I got to play Florida, that was really cool. And my uncle was also a big Florida fan. So then, you know, playing against them, that was awesome. And we played against them. I think we played against them 4 times when I was there. So it was fun.
Yeah. No, for sure. So what was maybe that one game that you had your best outing where you're like, all right, man, like this is that one game I could look back and I'm going to tell my grandkids about where like everyone just looked at me with some respect on that after that game.
I'd say it was against Florida. You know, they were ranked number one in the country and we played them at our place and we won and it was sold out. It was like 5,000 people there for like that little stadium. It was packed and then we wound up beating them, I think 9-6, but it was a good game. Jonathan India was on the other team.
Oh, nice.
And a bunch of other players and, you know, had a good game, went 4 for 5 and it was just fun. You know, it was just cool because, you know, that another going back to JUCO, it's cool because going from JUCO and then playing against University of Florida in front of 5,000 people, it was just cool, you know. So,
because yeah, no, for sure. Because I've talked to guys in JUCOs who got like maybe 30-40 people at some games, maybe a couple hundred. like they weren't pulling fans like obviously a D1 school, even D2 or D3 schools might have been pulling just because they're smaller campuses and things of that nature. You got drafted twice. After your first year in Chipola, you went back to school. Then you get drafted by the White Sox in the 27th round back in 2019. What was that draft day like for you? We'll talk about the second time. The first time is just kind of, I think it was like a courtesy pick kind of thing. But like, what was that like moment for you when you get drafted?
I mean, it was a different, like kind of like a difficult process for sure, because you don't really know what you're going to wind up doing. For me, I was a senior, so I was going into I was either going to start playing baseball or go into like the workforce and try and figure out what I want to do in my life. And just, you know, you meet with all those teams and stuff and you don't really know how it's going to go. They kind of give you these projections and their opinion on where they could see you getting drafted. And then, you know, it's not up to the area scout a lot of the time, you know? So it's they can say that they would pick you in the 6th to 10th round and then it probably doesn't happen. And, you know, the draft day is super long, like the, you know, cause day 1, day 2, and then I was drafted on day 3. So I was waiting like hours and I was just seeing a lot of kids that, you know, I played against get drafted. And I was like, oh God, like, am I going to get a chance? Like all I wanted was a chance to play. And then, I remember, you know, after the 20th round happened, me and my family, we were like listening to it outside on our back porch. And I just went inside and I was like, I'm not watching this anymore. So then I went for a walk around my neighborhood. And then I got back and was sitting on the couch and I saw some random person commented on my Instagram, like, congrats to getting drafted. And I didn't even know. Oh God, I got picked. So then I didn't know what team it was from. So then I pulled up the draft tracker and saw it was the White Sox. Then like 10 minutes later, they called me and, you know, it wound up being awesome. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. So it's cool.
Yeah. No, shout out to that one random person who, you know, broke the news to you. I mean, like Jeff Passan over there, just breaking news left and right.
For sure.
That's awesome.
So I think that comment, I got to find like who it was.
No, you legit, you got to do that. You got to go back, kind of backtrack, maybe get him a bag, get him a signed ball, you know, hook him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it, was it just like a random person completely? Or was it just like, you know, like a schoolmate, classmate kind of thing? Or was it just like some like completely out of the blue stranger?
I think it was like a random baseball fan that was literally just following the draft. And then so, oh, this person got drafted. I'm going to message him. And then he messaged me. So
that's crazy. So what, maybe talking about messaging, like what is maybe the craziest message you've gotten or a DM you gotten from like a fan or just a random person, like, you know, trying to get in your DMs as a baseball player? Maybe you had a good game. Maybe you had a bad game. They want to let you know.
I mean, not really any DMs, but I just remember when I was in Kannapolis in 2019, and I started off 0-14, and I remember walking out to the field, and these fans are telling me, they're like, "Hey, I hope you get your first hit today."
Jeez.
And I was literally like, "Yeah, I hope so too, man."
Yeah. Did you get your first hit?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah,
so he met me by the alleyway to go back into the clubhouse, and I was like, "Hey, you brought the good juju."
That's what's up. You gotta bring him with you every game now. He has to be your personal like caddy, but for like baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
Hype you up with a little negative energy before each at bat, you know, like, "You suck. All right, well, watch this."
Yeah, no, believe it or not, like, one of the best places to play, like, it's funny because like you can really hear everything they're saying, but it's Hickory, North Carolina. Like there's 4 or 5 guys there. They're in high A, and they just roast you with a megaphone. You can hear everything they're saying so clearly.
They just go to every game?
They go to every single home game.
That's sweet.
And they're super loyal fans. But yeah, it's funny because like I remember at the time I was leading the team in strikeouts, and they wouldn't stop saying that every single at bat, bringing up that I was leading the team in strikeouts. So I was like, "Oh, it's hilarious."
That's crazy. Well, like, and like fans in minor league stadiums they're so insane. Like, sometimes you get the most random, like, middle of nowhere town, and like half the guys are drunk and just kids yelling and screaming, "Signing my ball, blah blah blah." It's a wild atmosphere playing in the minor leagues, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is for sure. So it's funny because, I mean, you'll just get roasted sometimes, but you just gotta wear it.
Legitimately, you just gotta wear it, and you're just like, whatever, it is what it is. And I remember watching, I think it might have been on YouTube or something, and you got hit by a pitch and dugout's empty. Like, I mean, what's going on with that, man? How come you didn't charge the mound?
Yeah, so the batter before me was Xavier Fernandez. He's one of our catchers with the system, and he got in a little altercation with the opposing team catcher, and the bench is cleared prior to me getting hit by the pitch. So I was up next, and we just cleared benches. So I was like, "All right, there's a good chance that I'm going to get hit here." And if I do get hit, I feel like I have to charge the mound. So then I get hit. First pitch, and you know, you could kind of tell when this guy's gonna hit you because he's staring right at you.
Yeah,
he's like, you're watching the pitcher, he's not staring at the glove, he's looking at you.
Yeah,
and so he hits me, and then I take a few steps out to charge the mound. And I just got back from getting injured, so I ran out. I was like, I can't get back, suspended more games.
Yeah,
so I veered right off to first base, and the bench is cleared, but I got suspended anyway, so I might as well have done it.
Dang. So, what did they suspend you for? Just like, because the first couple steps that you took, they're like, "Well, you're maybe provoking an altercation or whatnot," or just what was their thought process behind that?
Yeah, so I got suspended for just provoking a benches clearing like altercation, and then I got suspended for one game, and then got fined. But luckily, our team paid for the fine, so that helped me out a lot.
Oh, shout out to them! Yeah, that might have been half your whole like yearly paycheck.
Yeah, exactly, right? So that was super big on their behalf, but they're awesome with that. So
yeah, another thing I want to get at, he's talking about, you know, a little bit of beef here and there. The chirping. There's a writer, or I don't know what for a blog or whatever he may be for, but you were kind of chirping back at him on Twitter. Like, what is going on with that? Like, give us some backstory on your beef with this Sox writer or whatever he is.
Yeah, well, I actually deleted my Twitter.
Oh, snaps! Okay.
Yeah, just because, you know, I would get too emotionally invested in some of the stuff I was, so I just deleted it. But yeah, so, you know, he would just consistently write about me on his Sox website or whatever. So I just responded back. I said, "If you're just going to like write negative stuff and without watching me play and coming to our games, just stop writing about me." And that's kind of what I said, because, you know, he's just doing his job, but, you know, he's not coming to the games, and he doesn't know like the business aspect. Kind of the reasonings to why I'm maybe DHing opposed to like it's not just because like this kid can't play a position. It's just because that's how it is, you know, in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. People that they invested money in play the position. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And that's like the politics of minor leagues. Like, if you're a high draft pick, you're going to get so much more leeway versus guys who maybe drafted a little bit later. And, even if they're not performing, that's just kind of the way the minor league system is. It's it is what it is kind of thing.
Yeah, but you got to get to double A, because then when you get to double A, it's like the coaches, they're like told where it's like, all right, now we're just playing the best players. We're going to try and win.
Okay.
We're going to for trying to like play in the big leagues, because like all big leagues, like when you get there, it's you got to win.
Yeah.
But at the lower, that's when it's more of the politics. But then double A, triple A, it's more like we're going to play.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's cool. That's good to know. Because I mean, I've heard guys tell me that stories are like that. Guys who've been out of the league now, who you know never got the call up, things of that nature. Like there's a lot of politics involved. But it's cool to know that like once you get higher levels, then some of that just kind of disappears and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, our manager here in AA with the Sox, he's awesome. He's trying to win every game, so I really liked playing for him. But his name's Justin Gershel. He's a great guy, and yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. So when you're not playing baseball, what do you do for fun? Obviously, you're there in Arizona. Like I mentioned, it's just snow outside. If I look at my window, I see snow. It's like it's 20 degrees right now. It feels like 8 degrees. You're out there in sunny Arizona. Like, what do you do for fun?
You know, we'll ride bikes. I like going to restaurants, having a couple drinks, maybe once or twice a week. And then, you know, just going on hikes. There's great mountains out here to hike, like Camelback Mountain's sick. Mm-hmm. So doing that, going to Sedona, like sightseeing around here in Arizona, it's like super pretty. It's like, you know, it's like you don't realize how nice of a place this is until you come, and it's so cool. So I might want to live here one day.
Yeah, no, like I think I've driven through Arizona. I've never actually been there for more than like, I think I ate at a restaurant driving through on like the way to Texas one year a while back. But
you should come this spring and come to a couple games.
All right, so I'm kind of torn because I want to go to Florida. Like, there's a couple guys in Florida in the Rays and the Marlins organization. But then I also know like you and a couple guys who are in Arizona. So I'm trying to debate where I'm going to go. So I'm still kind of up in the air where I'm going to be going, hopefully for spring training and stuff.
So if I give you any advice, you got to come to Arizona, because, you know, I've been in Florida for college and stuff, and the Florida is great at training as well. But the amazing thing about Arizona is all the teams are so close.
Yep.
So you can go to games and the furthest drive is going to be 45 minutes. So Big Kev just said the Valley is the spot to be at for spring training. Because, you know, there's just so many good teams out here, and, you know, you could drive like you could watch three games in a day, the Dodgers, the Sox, and the Giants, you know, in like all 15 minutes drive.
So that's a fair point. I mean, I feel if I do go there, it'd be I would watch a ton of games, but I would go there, try to make a bunch of content too. Just like try to interview a bunch of guys, just do stuff to grow the brand and whatnot.
And I think that there's a lot of cool spots out here in Arizona, like where you can film some great content. And I think that's them too.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do some live at bats, you know, see if I can take what I'm going to be watching from your videos and stuff, put that into practice.
We'll get you on the machine out here.
I love to hear that, man. All right, dude. You have a great rest of your day. Enjoy your holiday, bro.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.